approach Ms. Barron. Good morning to you and Mr. Ralph. Good morning to you again. And we've got a few folks coming in and out of the courtroom. So if you can wait just a second, Ms. Barron, do either of you have any questions before we begin? Then, Ms. Barron, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Julie Bear appearing on behalf of the appellant in this case, Ashley Corbin. Ms. Corbin's case is factually quite similar to the Dolinar case that was argued earlier this morning. My client was prosecuted criminally in the District Court of Odo County following an asset forfeiture proceeding filed outside of the criminal case pursuant to 28-431. Ms. Corbin filed a plea and bar. That plea and bar was overruled by the district court, and this appeal, of course, follows. As to the standing issue, I don't think there's any issue regarding standing for Ms. Corbin. If you look at the petition that was filed, she is listed in the caption. She's named in the caption. In the body of the complaint, she is alleged to be the owner, and in the court's order of forfeiture, she is found to be the owner of the currency that was forfeited.
Did she participate in the 431 proceedings?
Not in terms of attending the hearing, Your Honor, no.
Was she given notice of that proceeding?
Yes.
Does that make a difference?
Whether she was given notice? I don't think so.
Does it make a difference whether or not she participated?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
Was it contested?
No. No. And so, you know, I think the end result is whether there's participation or no participation. There was a punitive forfeiture of property that belonged to my client. And under 431, as a separate proceeding, we believe that the state is now barred from prosecuting Ms. Corbin criminally based upon the manner in which they address the forfeiture. Had they elected to file forfeiture under 416 upon attaining a conviction, of course, we wouldn't be here. There's no double jeopardy argument when the cumulative punishment is imposed within the confines of the same case. But when the state elects the easier route, perhaps under 431, then you can't, under the decision of Franco, continue or initiate a criminal prosecution arising under that same set of facts.
By not participating in the 431 proceeding, cannot individuals like your client use that proceeding as a strategy to run into the criminal proceeding and say, look, look, double jeopardy, I get out of jail free?
I think regardless of whether the owner of the currency participates or doesn't participate, it does create a situation under Franco, and whether you call it strategy or something else, I think that it is a bar to prosecuting her in that separate proceeding.
Do you think the court in Franco was correct?
I do. And I don't believe that the statutory amendments made by 1106 converted 431 from criminal to civil.
Well, I was going to ask, what did 1106 do?
That's it. It's a good question.
By looking at the language of the statute.
I think the end result was a far cry from the stated intention related in the legislative history. I don't think it did anything other than make the standard of proof consistent with 416. You know, if you look at the the history of 1106, and Judge Smith did a good job of, I think, going through that legislative history. 1106 initially intended to address only 416, and then as the bill progressed, they include some statutory amendments to 431. But when you look at the intent of the drafters of that bill, you know, they're saying we want to eliminate civil forfeiture, which is interesting because the forfeiture in Franco was determined to be criminal and not civil in nature. We intend to eliminate the condition where somebody can have their property forfeited without being charged criminally. And so the end result isn't consistent with what that stated.
Well, back to the question, what's the language of 431 as it emerged from 1106? What is it and what did it do?
Yeah, I don't think it did anything other than...
Well, it certainly kicked one of the supports in Franco
It did change the burden of proof.
Didn't it actually remove two of the bases of Franco? Because Franco relies both on the fact that the standard was beyond a reasonable doubt, and then they also say, and the legislature has acquiesced, they haven't changed it. Well, now after 1106, they have changed it, haven't they?
Right, but they didn't remove it from the criminal code. And so
Who decides where a statute is codified?
I think the legislature does that.
Don't we have other examples of SORA, for instance, we've said is civil and not criminal in nature, and it appears in the criminal code. So that how much weight do we put on where it appears?
I think that's a factor, at least according to the decision in Franco and the subsequent cases, and I think also as part of the federal case law. I think there are multiple hallmarks that identify 431 as criminal, you know, not just the location in the code, but also the fact that it's punitive.
I'm sure Mr. Austin is going, you heard him earlier, he's going to come up and say Franco was wrong from the beginning. This, I think his main part of his argument is this was always an in rem proceeding, and in rem proceedings are intended to be civil. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, I don't think the court was incorrect in deciding Franco or Spots. I think clearly 431 is criminal, and I think that's a long-established line of case law hallmarking that particular statute as criminal in nature. And there were a number of factors that Franco looked at in making that determination. You know, this is a standalone case, but it's brought by the county attorney. It is punitive.
Can you respond to the language in 431 that says the law enforcement shall seize, prosecutor shall file within 10 days?
I think it's an election of remedies that is to be made ultimately by the prosecutor in the case. If you elect to file under 431, then this is the process. If you elect to file under 413, this is the process. I don't think that 431 prohibits a prosecutor from making the election to proceed under 416.
How is 431 different than the federal forfeiture statute that the U.S. Supreme Court concluded in Ursary was civil in nature?
In all honesty, Your Honor, I have not looked at the federal forfeiture statute, so I don't know how that compares specifically to 431.
What are the hallmarks? You're mentioning hallmarks of 28431 that make it criminal in nature. I've heard that it's filed by the county attorney.
Presumably
it was filed by the a prosecutor in Ursary, and they concluded that that was still civil in nature. So what else do we have?
I think it also, in terms of its punitive character, you know, you're forfeiting assets that aren't per se contraband. This is not, you know, the gambling device scenario where you have a per se item of contraband. This is a normal everyday item, whether it's a vehicle, whether it's cash, whether it's some other form of asset. So ordinary legal items being forfeited, it's punitive. The petition is to state the elements of the underlying criminal offense that give rise to the forfeiture. And it's part and parcel of that statute that's authorizing law enforcement to seize property without a warrant and to maintain it in law enforcement possession until it's needed as part of a criminal case or until it's forfeited as part of the standalone forfeiture proceeding.
Maybe you can clarify this for me. What is your view that after LB 1106, is it possible analytically that 431 is civil but 416 is criminal?
I don't believe so. You know, the state's going to make that argument, of course, based upon the change in burden of proof, but I think if you examine the legislative history versus the end result, that's not what has occurred. I think their option, if they wanted to eliminate what they referred to as civil forfeiture, which 431 was not, certainly prior to the statutory amendment, they should have repealed 431, created a separate statute somewhere else in the code, and that didn't occur. So I think when you look at 416 in comparison to 431, I think they're both criminal in nature.
If a forfeiture proceeding is filed under 28431 and the identified owner doesn't appear, does the trial court ever adjudicate ownership at all in that forfeiture proceeding? Is there ever a judicial adjudication as to ownership?
Well, there was in my case. You know, if you look at Judge Smith's order, she does make a finding within the four corners of the order saying Ashley Corbin is the owner of the $4,320. So I think there was.
So in your case, there was?
Yes. Yes. And I believe I'm out of time unless you have any other questions for me.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ralph, good morning again.
Morning again. May it please the court, my name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Like in Dolinar, the primary issue here is whether the district court properly overruled the plea bar. And for many of the same reasons, we think that it did. And we ask this court to affirm the district court's ruling.
Can I ask you the same,
sure,
if not similar, if not the same? Pardon me. Can both of these outcomes be correct after the passage of 1106, that 431 could be civil and 416 is criminal?
Yes.
And that's what the state is urging.
Correct.
Thank you.
And I did also think of I'll get back to that.
I guess my two things can be true.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I did want to touch on what Your Honor Justice Stacey had talked about, the finding of ownership and things, standing. One, I'm not sure that the finding was proper or necessary here. When there are no claims.
Does the statute require
a
judge to find ownership?
Well, I don't think so if there's no claims. In fact, if the owner is unknown completely, the district court could proceed with the forfeiture by finding that it was, you know, used or intended to be used to facilitate a violation of the act. You don't even need to know who it was. So finding of ownership is not required. In any event, even if that finding were given weight here, though, I don't think that that addresses a prong of the court's, you know, the failure to participate still as an abandonment of that property. And I think that's what the California decision I cited discusses, as well as several of the federal courts of appeals, that, well, if you don't participate, then we deem it abandoned property just sort of as a matter of law. And, you know, it's axiomatic that the forfeiture of abandoned property doesn't punish anyone. So I don't think that, it's irrelevant that she didn't participate here in the forfeiture proceedings. Going back to legislative intent, I won't, rehash everything unless this court has additional questions. But, again, it's our position that the change by LB 1106, particularly the burden of proof, in light of their awareness of Franco and that Franco rested on that in large part, shifts the 28431 to be, I think, intended to be civil. And if that's the case, then again, you would proceed to the second prong of the ursory test, which we don't think you can show by the clearest proof that it was so punitive in purpose or effect to transform it into a criminal sanction. And that means that double jeopardy doesn't apply since it's a civil sanction rather than a criminal one. I did briefly look at the ursory case again, Justice Papik, but some of the considerations that they discussed in addressing that second prong, for example, certain non-punitive goals, ensuring property owners take care of managing the property, to the extent it applies to proceeds of illegal activity, it serves the additional non-punitive goal of ensuring that persons do not profit from their illegal acts. There's no requirement to demonstrate scienter. Deterrence is both a civil and criminal objective. And so all of those factors, I think, are exactly the same here based on our statute as well. And so that would suggest, again, that it's not so punitive in purpose or effect that it would transform it into a criminal sanction. I guess that's all I have, unless this court has additional questions.
Ms. Baer argued that the fact that the items forfeited were not per se contraband is, in her view, an indicator that it's a criminal in nature. Do you want to respond to that argument?
I don't know if it were per se contraband. I guess. I mean, the forfeiture statute as a whole is addressed to many different types of property, not all of which are contraband per se. So I don't know that that would change, its criminal or civil nature, I guess would be my answer. We'd ask that you affirm the district court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, that concludes arguments in State versus Corbin, so you are excused. And that also concludes arguments for the day. So the court is adjourned.